Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world?
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground.
All right. Hello, everybody. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman. We are with our second post-election grassroots election protection coalition Zoom call. It's everybody's, I think, breathing a little easier. We are nonpartisan, but we're still breathing a little easier, although not entirely. And we have a tremendously huge agenda to deal with in terms of election protection. The Grassroots Election Protection Coalition is otherwise known as GREEP. You may remember that in 1972, Richard Nixon ran for re-election, and his group was called CREEP, Committee to Re-elect the President. So we're going to be the GREEPs. We're going to have a spirited and important and deep-reaching discussion of the election, and it's certainly not over. The front page of the New York Times today says that Mitch McConnell, who really will be running the country in many ways, is not supporting a concession, that he does not want Donald Trump to concede. The airwaves, the internet, they're all full of people challenging the outcome of the election. And I have to say that we have spent the last 20 years yelling at Al Gore for conceding, and now these people are not. I'll leave it at that. A game plan for this group, Grassroots Election Protection Coalition, or GREEP, is to proceed for the next 4 years. It is our idea to remake the electoral system in this country into something vaguely resembling a democracy, which it does not now. We have a full agenda of things that we've learned over the past 20 years since Florida 2000, starting with the work of Bev Harris and Greg Palast, and going through Ohio 2004, all the way through 2010 with the massive gerrymandering that was done. Then 2016 with the questionable vote counts in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania that were never really fully challenged, right up to today. And there is absolutely no doubt that this election, every inch of it, is going to be challenged by Donald Trump and the Republican Party, and that is their constitutional right. And we're going to see whatever flaws there are in this system really, really flushed out. So what we want to do is meet weekly. WEEK. We want to meet. They want to be strong meetings, but we want to meet every week through the end of the year. We will see after inauguration. Maybe we'll go twice monthly. But I have no intention, and I'm sure many of you have no intention of entering another presidential election in 2024 with the kind of mishigas that we went into this one. There are so many holes and flaws and things to be fixed in our electoral system that there's no way to walk away from this. We do have a couple of many things to be proud of. I believe that the election protection movement did have a significant impact on this election, made it fairer, made it more transparent, made it more democratic, and that the outcome in many ways might not have been possible had not we spent, or various people spent, 20 years trying to clean up this election system, which is still an incredible mess. And so I am gonna briefly, this is a list I came up with. I'm gonna read through it. I will send it to everybody this coming week, and we can discuss it in deeper detail as we proceed through the month. We will meet again, another Zoom, same time, same place, a week from today. And we'll continue, as I said, through the year. But in between now and then, you'll get this list, and we can go into deeper detail. Today, we're going to go, you know, there's so much to talk about. Florida, Georgia, Arizona, Michigan. Jan Bandura, I hope, is joining us. Chuck and Joel show us some pictures from their vigils. We have Michelle Siegel from Pennsylvania. Emily Levy is going to update us on her great work as scrutineers. So it's going to be a full agenda. I see we're joined by Benny Smith from Tennessee. Benny, it's good to see you. And Benny is an actual election official who's been at the heart of some very serious stuff. So before we do that, I'm just going to read through this sort of statement of purpose. And then I did not have time to send it to everybody. I will send it to you as we go along. If there's time at the end, we can discuss this and that about it. But the point is to put this out on the table and then to get into the detail of this astonishing, unprecedented election. I will say that a number of major breakthroughs did happen. Number one, and most important, is vote by mail. This was partly our doing. I mean, COVID obviously was responsible for the imperative that people not go to the polls in person or to go as minimally as possible. But this did, our work promoting paper ballots did have an impact here. We have a very substantial, in the 80-90% range of the votes cast in this election were cast on paper. Thank God, this was a huge step forward from those touch and pray touch screens that dominated our previous elections, in which we hope to never see again. We also had digital scanners counting the ballots. Now there are flaws that we've been discussing with the digital scanners, but they make a huge difference. The idea that you can scan in a paper ballot, have a digital ballot image, and preserve the paper ballots, this is light years ahead of what we've had at any time prior in American history. Very, very big deal. We also had, again because of the COVID, a generational shift in poll workers. This is also a big deal. Historically, I don't have to tell anybody on this call, poll workers have been the elderly, the people on Social Security, needing wanting to be part of the process and also getting a day's pay. And for good reason, people in that age group did not come out this year because of COVID. I remember there was a time earlier in the process this year where it appeared there would be a massive shortage of poll workers. And then all of a sudden, right after the George Floyd marches, as a matter of fact, millennials and even Generation Z kids started pouring in to be poll workers. This is a very significant generational change in our country. And I did see a map, by the way, and you can Google this. If you want to see what really turned this election, all this talk about Hispanics and Blacks and the ethnic groups and did or did not vote, it was really the millennials who turned this election. And I will send you later, I can't do it now, everybody on this list, a map of what the election would have looked like if it was only millennials voting. And suffice it to say that there would be no contest, there would be no recounts, and that Joe Biden would have won by over 400 electoral votes. So I will send you a link to this map. It's a similar thing happened in 2016. The millennials and then the Generation Z, and I have four millennial daughters and one Generation Z daughter, they were way to the left of the rest of the electorate in this country. And this is one of the major changes. I have seen no press on this whatsoever. Nobody is talking about the generational changeover in the electorate. So we can talk about that later in this call, if you like. So we are actually over 100 participants today. Nice to see everybody. This is a preamble to our work for the next 4 years. It's up for grabs, of course, but it's my a stab at getting us going. And I am serious about 4 years, and that's certainly what it's gonna take or more. We aim by 2024 to reshape our foundational political process into a modern, efficient, incorruptible democratic system that reliably reflects the true wishes of the American people. What a concept. Number one, and this is a trifecta. Number one, revolutionize the nuts and bolts of how we vote. Expand and protect a universal voter registration process. How do people get registered in this country, and why are people kicked off the voter rolls or even denied? Same day registration must be allowed through election day. Photo ID may not be required for voting. Legal witness sheets may not be required for voting by mail, as was happening in North Carolina and elsewhere. Felons retain their voting rights, regardless of fines and fees owed. Citizens may not be disenfranchised for lack of a street address. That's for the indigenous community. As we heard last week from Danny Paul Sheehan and Tatanka, the Native American community, indigenous, generally do not have street addresses. This is something we have to fix. No voter may be purged without 90 days advance public notice. We still believe that the purging of the voter rolls, 16 and a half million people were purged from the voter rolls prior to this election. That should not be allowed to happen. And anybody who is in line to be purged must be notified. Proposed purges must be approved by a multi-partisan commission in public. Any potential purge subject to public legal hearing. Notice must come, if you're being purged, you must get notice by an oversized postcard or a phone or a text. Maybe other people have other ideas. And again, this is just a working document. This is not meant to be written in stone. Every state must mail a ballot to every registered voters 30 days before election day. As we know, this has been done in Colorado, Utah, Washington, Oregon, and Hawaii. This year it was done in California and other states as well. Nevada also did it, and Trump had a heart attack when that happened. But it's essential. Make election day and the 3 days prior. In other words, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday should be national holiday. And expand early voting to 21 days before election day. That means that you've gotten your ballot, it's been mailed out, by then you should have your ballot. Early voting should be 21 days before election day. Restore neighborhood voting centers. In other words, the precincts should be open and everybody should be able to walk to a precinct. Proliferate ballot drop boxes. We know that in Texas and Ohio, ballot drop boxes were limited to one account per county. It's absolutely ridiculous, insane. Harris County with 4 million people in Houston. Franklin County, Columbus had 1.3 million. One drop box, come on. Promote drive-through voting, as you recall. They're still trying to throw out the votes. They did try to throw out the votes. 127,000 were people, Harris County in Houston, where people voted drive-through. We want drive-through voting. Why not? And then maybe they put them at McDonald's. You can like drop off your ballot and then get a hamburger. Adopt all sports stadiums and arenas as voting centers. This is another big success story this year. The Atlanta Hawks announced, and then we wrote an article promoting the idea that sports stadiums should build voting centers. They're perfect for voting centers. They're indoors. People can go in, sit down, be sheltered, restrooms, maybe even food, no guns, all that stuff, plenty of parking. You can do drive-through voting in the parking lots of the sports stadiums. 20 NBA teams allowed their sports, their arenas to be used this year as voting centers. Football stadiums, I know, in Kansas City and Charlotte, I mean, it's a big deal. We could not get them to use the hockey arena in Columbus, Ohio, as a voting center, even though the county owns it. So this needs to be proliferated. Ban weapons 2,500 feet from any voting center, absolutely. Harassment of anyone standing in a voting line should be a federal felony. Local police should be out in force to secure the voting lines, and they should be nonpartisan. issue clear guidelines on acceptance or rejection of paper ballots. This is a big deal. As we talk about many times in our meetings, the key spot in our elections is where it's decided if a ballot is going to be accepted or rejected. And the guidelines for doing this and for who can be there to monitor, I mean, there were huge fights. How close can you be to that table where ballots are accepted or rejected? This is a big deal. There need to be clear guidelines, and any process needs to be totally transparent in terms of accepting or rejecting incoming ballots. Any ballot postmarked on or before Election Day must be counted. Okay, I mean, we don't have to expand on that. We know how big a deal that became. Deadlines to finish counts and recounts should be at least 30 days after Election Day. This is ridiculous. So many of these states, this is what happened in Florida 2000 and again in 2018, is unmeetable deadlines for the counts and recounts. Now, the great news about paper ballots going through digital scanners is that if the ballot images are preserved and the paper ballots are properly filed after they're scanned, doing a recount is very easy. There should not take, the counting and recount with that system.
Sluggo?
Yes.
If you could just go through the list and then we can have some discussion and then we can have some amplification, but we're still on item one.
And I understand. Okay, we're getting there. Okay, where are we here? No ballot can be disqualified without a cure process. Anybody in line at Election Day closing time, this became a big issue, must be allowed to vote. All precincts must provide voters with multilingual staff. In other words, that's clear enough, I think. Poll workers need to live in the precinct where they work, and poll workers can be as young as 15 years old, which did happen this year. All paper ballots must be scanned with digital image preserved. We talked about that. Touchscreen machines are banned, except for special needs. All ballots must be processed and scanned as received. That means they don't sit around in boxes before they're processed and scanned. It makes protecting them a lot easier. I can't see on the bottom here. Can you lift it up? There you go. All poll books must be preserved. All digital images must be preserved. And all paper ballots must be preserved for 22 months. That's the federal law already. Change of custody must be subject to transparent public scrutiny. No results issued until the polls close on Election Day. The coding of the scanning machines got to be public record. No scanning machines can be linked to the internet. Elections within margins, and this is arbitrary, 2.5%, whatever, must be counted. Recounts are done with both ballot images and paper ballots. No candidate is to be charged for recounts within a certain percentage. Poll tapes are to be photographed. We got to talk about this today. Photographing and cataloging the poll tapes, see how well we did with that. Poll tape records are publicly audited with central tabulators. So comparing the poll tapes with the central tabulators, we're almost done. Number two, end gerrymandering and abolish the Electoral College. The gerrymandering is going to be easier to do than the Electoral College. Joel Siegel is going to be totally on the case for that. Nonpartisan districting commissions, as in California. Howie Hawkins has raised this. Multi-representational districts, which is complicated. Ranked choice voting. And we need to figure out how to establish these districting commissions and abolish the Electoral College. Until abolition, the Electoral College must follow the popular majority. And finally, this tiny issue of getting money out of politics, get rid of Citizens United. Money is not speech, okay? This is not gonna be easy, but it will be fun. All right, any quick questions about that? I'm gonna send that to you on paper. We can do the deep dive next week. And that's going to be our work, and request whatever you add for the next 4 years.
I would like to add to your introduction of what we got. We got honesty and integrity and strength from the U.S. Postal Service. And they did not allow themselves, they also had supported Bernie, by the way, the union, but they did not allow themselves to be taken over and manipulated by Louis DeJoy.
Thank you. All right. Marion Eady, Jennifer Tanner, and Daniel Wolf. Marion?
Yeah, I wanted to say that, you can't see me, but anyway, I wanted to push back a little on the idea that we should promote universal voting by mail. I think the U.S. Postal Service in the year of the pandemic was heroic, but I think there is some opportunities for fraud and slippage, and voting by mail is not as completely transparent or foolproof as voting in person can be.
Okay.
And I know that there are a bunch of election integrity activists, especially Marilyn Marks, who's not on our calls, who are quite concerned about voting by mail. So I would not make that an ask.
We will go into that in depth next week.
Okay.
My purpose in this was just to lay out an agenda for the next 4 years, and it will certainly be enhanced and debated next week. Okay, Marion?
Yeah, can I forward the Zoom call to Marilyn Marks in Georgia?
Please do. Anybody who wants to forward this to anybody, please do. Anybody you think wants to come on, we will do it. Jennifer Tanver? Thank you, Marion.
Yes, thank you for that, Harvey. That's a really good list. I'd like to add, I wanted to mention this today, and this is very timely. We have to send a letter to Governor Newsom about the short list to replace Kamala Harris.
Okay, we can't do that now, though.
Okay, but on the call sometime?
Dorothy Reich is working on that. Yes, you can bring it up later.
I'm talking exactly about what Dorothy Reich is, but I wanted to share it with everyone. It's very important.
Okay, yes. Can we do it later in the call?
Sure. Give me a second.
Okay, thank you, Jim. Yes. We'll come back to it. Raise your hand later, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Rich Presida?
Thank you. Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great, because I don't think my connection is that good, so I'm sorry. Okay, so I know that there are a lot of groups out there who are telling us to be passive and inactive at this time. I think that's a mistake.
I agree.
We knew what Trump's strategy was going to be. We knew he was going to do this. And I don't believe our strategy can be to just sit back and let him do it. And I also, as an attorney, I recognize that things aren't predictable in the court of law, and that this court has a 6-3 majority with 3 Trump appointees for the Republicans. We cannot let this go to the Supreme Court. I mean, he's abusing the court right now. And then also the problem with the strategy that the Democrats are using right now is that it causes us to act as if we are in denial of what Trump is doing.
Okay, listen, Rich, we will come back to that. I appreciate that. The purpose at this point is to just lay this out, and then we'll get into that. Rich, that's a good point, though, and we need to talk about more. So raise your hand later in the call, please, okay?
Harvey.
Ann Garrison and then Bob. Okay, Ann? Ann Garrison?
Yeah, okay. Again, I'm just a journalist. I talked to Harvey for Pacifica Radio, and he added me to the list.
Yes.
And I'm just trying to understand this here. Isn't the system that you described as ideal, the scanners and paper ballots, isn't that still just as good as the good faith of whoever the election officials are?
Not if they're publicly observed. And that we can discuss about that. That's a good point. And we'll discuss that in greater detail after we go through the specifics of the election from today. Okay, Ann? I mean, it's a good point.
Okay. Yeah,
we will come back to it. I just did this run through. They give us an agenda for the big picture. Thank you, though, Ann. I appreciate that. And thank you for having me on your show. Bob Fitrakis?
Yeah, I was just going to argue for next week that the starting point's got to be the elimination of private, for-profit, partisan entities. We've got to drive them out of the electoral process. That should be our starting point.
For that, good point. So listen, I will send this to everybody by mail, email. It'll come in your Solartopia list. Write me back, add whatever you want to add. and we will have a really great spirited discussion about all this next week. Does that make sense?
Harvey?
Right, yes.
Let's have an email list where we start this discussion, but in an organized fashion, like, subject one, subject two, because there's lots of discussion about many points, and it would be, we got to get this started. So I think an e-list of those people who want to work on a document like this and start pushing this would be really helpful.
Harvey, can I?
100%, yes.
Yeah, just real quickly, Harvey, just so that everybody hears it as well, because I think we need to build consensus around this particular point as well. I think we need to build into our conversation, our demands across the country, the idea of independent audits, no more self-audits. It's got to be independent outside audits. And those audits should be geared to the concept of universal standards. Harvey sent out some great critiques of the NIST standards that are being proposed by the House of Representatives, by the Democrats there. That's fine. It's prescriptive technological requirements are great, but we need prescriptive minimum ISO kinds of standards as well.
Okay, absolutely. So we will work with Joel and Paul, Mike and Steve to whip up an interactive mailing list for the time being. I'll send this through my Solartopia list. And again, next week we can really do the deep dive on all this.
Harvey?
Yeah.
One other thing I would, Lynn Feinerman here, I would like to follow up on what Bob Petrakis said and I would really like to see us take the ownership and operation of all voting technology out of the private sector and put it somehow into government so that it has government oversight and it is checked for accuracy and for exactly what the process is.
Absolutely. A good point. We'll get that rolling. So Ruth Strauss, and then we're going to get into the specifics of the election. Ruth?
Hi. Great meeting, great list. Just along those lines, it is the taxpayer money that pays for these voting machines, and we've all learned about all the whining and dining that goes on between these companies that make these machines and the election registrars, et cetera. So I have no idea how one would go about this, but we've got a lot of smart people on this call. There probably ought to be a committee, a citizen oversight committee, when a place is about to purchase a certain type of voting machine and whether ballot images can be stored and all of that business.
I agree. And we have a great expert on that on the call. We'll come to him later, Benny Smith, who's really, if anybody knows about that, but as we want to say, we're now the ones who are doing the whining. So we will proceed with it. Does anybody else have anything before we move into the nitty gritty of the 2020 election here? Thank you for allowing me the leeway to present that list. I just felt that since we're post-election now and embarking on 4 years of work, to remake this electoral system, that it was a reasonable time to introduce it. So thank you for your forbearance on that. Ray Lutz, you said you can't raise your hand. Did you want to say something?
Oh, yeah. Thanks a lot, Harvey. Thank you. I just wanted to point out that we are looking at the anomalous results in Florida and in North Carolina, especially because the pollsters got those so wrong. And so we're trying to get the ballot images and other polling tapes and other data pulled together for those. And I did have a good conversation with Lynn Bernstein about probably opening up a lawsuit in order to get to the poll tapes in North Carolina, because they're withholding those. And then we're going to be going after the ballot images. And even if they have deleted them, I think we can still do something with the write-in only ballot images and get some kind of an idea about what went on down there. in both North Carolina and Florida now.
Let's, I want to segue, Ray, go ahead. I do want to say, come back to you and talk specifically about Florida and North Carolina.
Okay.
As well as Georgia, Michigan, if you can.
Yeah, Georgia, of course, I don't know, you're probably going to talk about that more in this call, but we need to really start addressing that because this is going to be a huge focus.
Yes.
And, trying to get away from the BMDs to hand-marked paper ballots and to make sure that we get auditing being done there because they're one of the very few states that even if the audits are horrible, they should have them. I mean, this is our opportunity to really get something done in Georgia.
All right, so we're going to come right back to that in a minute. I want to make sure Emily Levy is on, then we're going to go back to Florida, North Carolina, and Georgia. And Georgia obviously is going to be a laboratory for election protection. I mean, you know, but I don't have to tell you anything. You know what everybody knows that. So Emily, can you segue? You've been on our calls frequently. Tell us what Scrutineers is going to do as we proceed forward. And then we'll go back to the actual states.
Thanks, Harvey, and hi, everyone. So I don't know if, I know it's really hard to see the screen while you're presenting, and there's a lot of us in the chat saying we really want this call to be focused on what needs to happen right now, that it's not time yet to focus on the next 4 years because there's too much that's urgently needed now. I really believe that we need to be doing everything we can to collect evidence of how people really voted in this election, because if there are challenges that come up that are bogus, we need to be able to verify the vote count. And if the vote count is wrong, we need to know that too. We're working on a bunch of different projects about that in Scrutineers. And I just want to say that we also have the ability in there to have we have discussion boards where the discussions stay threaded and organized. And if people want to come in and have a place to talk about what to advocate for in legislation in the future, we can do that in there. And I'm sure we will be doing that. That we need to be monitoring what's going on now in the election offices as they do the processing post-election. And in some places you can even do that remotely. And we've been collecting the links of where you can do that remotely, where you can observe the audits and the adjudication of ballots and the processing, the signature matching, if that's still going on, and that kind of thing. That we need more folks doing that. We are going to be focusing also on the upcoming Georgia runoffs and really using this opportunity, this time that we're in right now and this situation where we've got a lot of people on the right for the first time, raising questions about how our votes are counted, that presents an opportunity for us to perhaps get some consensus that we haven't had before in this country around the counting of votes. And I think it's really important that we be talking and thinking carefully about how to use that opportunity without playing into the hands of those who are making bogus claims of fraud. So that's something that we're working on. I'm interested in having more conversations with people about it and taking action as needed. So those are just some of the things that are going on in Scrutineers now. You're welcome to come join us, and I'll post two links. One is a link to join, and one is a link to the tool that we have that can help you find a way to get involved with or without joining Scrutineers with projects that are going on right now. So I just posted both those links. And I don't know who you have talking about North Carolina, but if it's not Lynn Bernstein, please add her. She's amazing, and she knows what needs to happen there now. So I'll shut up so others can talk.
Wonderful. Thank you, Emily. Lynn Bernstein is on the call. Lynn, do you want to give us a little heads up from North Carolina?
Sure. So right now, this coming week, like Emily said, we're going to be continuing to count votes here in North Carolina. And we encourage people to choose a county and go online and watch that process. They'll be going through ballots. But more importantly, as Ray mentioned, we need to get the full sets of poll tapes. We had a lot of volunteers on election night deployed, and many counties said that we couldn't see the tapes. My own county is saying that we can't see the tapes because they're not legally public record. We are going to pursue a lawsuit. And then all of the high-speed tabulators that most of the large counties used for counting absentee ballots in North Carolina, those automatically save ballot images. We need to get somebody to commit, and I don't have the bandwidth for it, we need to get somebody to commit to pursue legal avenues to get those ballot images in North Carolina. And so I would say that those are the priorities, as well as we don't do a complete audit in North Carolina. And in fact, the audit that we do, I don't think meets the letter of the law. And I think that any party should challenge that in court. It could be the Republicans do it. I doubt the Democrats will do it, but somebody should challenge that in court because the audits that we're doing are not sufficient.
Well, it's interesting. I had a conversation with John Brakey earlier. We're now in a situation where the Republicans are saying things that we've been saying for 20 years. And, you know, everybody's yelling, screaming about how Trump is doing this and that, and he's refusing to concede. We wanted Al Gore not to concede. We wanted John Kerry not to concede. We wanted Hillary Clinton not to concede. So maybe this will really lift the rock and we can see everything under it. Now, my understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, Jennifer, is that the Democratic candidate for U.S. Senate in North Carolina has not conceded. Is that correct?
I'm not sure, but I would hope that until all the votes are counted, because we still have quite a few votes out there to be counted, that nobody would really concede in North Carolina yet. I do think we need to work with whatever groups want to push for more transparency, even if we disagree with them ideologically on policy. I think we all agree on transparency, and I think it would be a very bad idea for us at this point to just remain silent and not push for to pull back the curtain. I think Trump has every right to pull back the curtain and want evidence that he lost. Just like I think if we had a candidate we liked that lost, we would want them to look at all the evidence. And I think we need to put partisanship aside completely and focus on the goal of transparency. And this is something that, you know, all Americans can come together on, and I hope that we do. And I think that we can leverage any publicity right now of people screaming for transparency and ask for that too. There's no harm in asking for evidence-based elections. There's no harm in it.
Okay. Lynn? Very good.
Lynn, can I say something?
Laura?
Hi. So we have a lot of experience in Chicago suing for access to the ballots and things like that. And really, in Illinois, it really takes a candidate. The average person or civic organizations seem to lack standing in the court. So that's why we're saying, have you contacted Cunningham's campaign? And is he willing, he's got a lot of money, is he willing to pursue some of these efforts?
Okay, that's good. It's also one of the reasons we have Harry Hawkins on the call. It's one of the reasons we have the Green Party, which still has standing in many of these states and could be a vehicle for us with Howie's cooperation and to pursue some of the things that we need to pursue.
Harvey?
Yes.
Let me point out, what the Republicans appear to be saying is now what they appear to be talking about voter fraud. What we have been talking about for a long time is election fraud. They're two entirely different things, as you know. Secondly, Lynn has plenty of standing. She's done a great job, but she's got, the rules may be slightly different in Illinois, but Lynn has plenty of standing to go in there and seek the public record she's been looking for.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Pete Pekarsky, an attorney. I wanted to go to Susan Pinchon real quick.
Could I say something real quickly, Harvey?
Yes, please.
Just to augment what Lynn was saying, Tom Hinkle, I did get into Orange County photographed all the poll tapes and then analyzed them, and the poll tape results matched the central computer results. So I didn't see anything wrong in Orange County of North Carolina.
All right. Susan.
Harvey, oh, go ahead.
Yeah, Bob, go ahead.
Just briefly, what you said earlier, I'm seeing a lot of stuff on the internet that sounds like us in 2000 and 2004. It's not just the voter purges. They're talking about flip votes, or whether it's true or not. But I think we should have a commitment to investigate regardless of what happens. I mean, there's clearly some really bad exit polls out there that seem to be, that went against Biden as well.
Absolutely. Well, listen, this is interesting to work alongside the likes of Steve Bannon and Karl Rove in challenging the legitimacy of an election. Susan Pinchon, can you tell us anything about Florida?
Hi, Harvey. I hope you can hear me. I'm driving. Can you hear me okay?
Well, maybe you should pull over and we'll come back to you.
I'm going
to
pull over right. Yeah, I'm going to pull over right here. Actually, I've got right here, and then I can shut my car
makes
off.
Very, makes me very nervous when people are talking to us for moving cars. We will get to Georgia. I want to get to Florida, Arizona, and then we've said a bit about North Carolina, and Michelle Siegel is going to talk to us about Pennsylvania, and then we'll get into Georgia. Okay.
And so. Yep, I pulled over, and actually this is going to be really quick. Florida, I'm working with the Florida Circle of Scrutineers. We've done a statewide public records request for just about every record you can imagine. And it's going to be very expensive, but we'll selectively decide which ones to go for as we go along. But I am all for evidence-based elections. And by that, I mean ballot images, poll tapes, and now we have the digital poll tapes. You can actually now go to a county that has a digital scanner, that has digital scanners. You don't have to go in and look at all the tapes, although I do suggest comparing some of those signed ones to the ones you get digitally, but they have them in files now. They can just send you all the poll tapes. But not just that, every digital scanning machine has an audit tape, an audit log. The central tabulator has a system log and an event log and other audit logs. And those tell amazing things about an election, just like a black box in an airplane crash or from an airplane. And I really think we've gotten away from that too much with the RLAs, and which I'm all for. I'm for every kind of redundancy you can imagine, but I'm very excited about Florida and looking at all the evidence of the election and a great group of people with the Florida Circle of Scrutineers. And Miami-Dade looks odd. Osceola County looks odd. We don't know yet, but we're going to look into it and we'll find out. Thanks, Harvey.
Well, thank you, and thank you for pulling off the road. We appreciate it. Anybody want to ask Susan about Florida before we move on to Pennsylvania? Okay, thank you. Thank you again.
Susan, I'll take you up on that, Harvey. What worked out in Miami-Dade? I did. I just asked the question. What worked out in Miami-Dade and Osceola?
Okay. Well, Joe Biden, Miami-Dade is a pretty Democratic county, and this is at the very preliminary. I really haven't even really looked into it much. This is just talking to other people, but and a little bit of news reporting. But Joe Biden had fewer votes than Hillary Clinton in Miami-Dade, and Donald Trump had 200,000 more than 2016. They're saying it's the Cuban population, and it well might be. But we will know a lot when we look at the voter registration rolls, who voted, the demographics compared to the poll tapes. It'll take time, but we'll piece all that together, and it should be very interesting. And it may be completely legitimate. Again, I'm not saying that this, that anything was amiss, but when there are outliers like that, it's, something that's a little different, then it's worth looking into.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are nonpartisan, but it seems awful fishy to me what happened in South Florida. I'd really be interested. They always come up with some kind of explanation, but that one does not ring true to me.
And I will say Osceola County also has a large Hispanic population, some of the same numbers were different there. And I was part of trying to help someone overturn an election in Osceola County in 2010. And it was one of the most really corrupt things I've seen. And the judge, the day before he dismissed the case, the judge said, well, I can't say that I haven't seen fraud here because I have. And then the attorney for the other side stood up and said, Your Honor, please do not tear this community apart. And by the next day, somebody had gotten to him because he just dismissed the case. But someday, it's a fascinating story of surveillance video showing the operations manager stealing ballot seals and people in the middle of the night carting ballots. And anyway, it was a real fiasco. So I'm interested in looking at that county again also. Thanks.
Yeah, well, we're going to continue with this, and we will go deeper into Florida, which has been a source of terrible problems, as everybody knows, for a long time. Maybe we can get to the bottom of it. Thank you, Susan. Anybody else on Florida before we go to Pennsylvania? Okay, thank you again. Michelle Siegel, are you on with us from Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania was a disaster at the state level. It went for Biden at the top, but the state level just went redder. It doesn't make any sense. A lot of state races are looking at their data, and it almost appears that the Republicans straight party vote, when that was taken away out of Pennsylvania. And in my data, specifically in my race, the exact number of my opponents lead against Trump was my exact number of decrease from Biden. In every county, and other people are seeing this too in their state level data races. Again, I'm not saying I won, but something doesn't make any sense when I had documented Trump supporters who hate establishment politicians saying to me, I'm going to vote for you, and it didn't show up anywhere in my precincts. There's been reporting of people that have said on their touch screens, when they hit the Democrat, it lit up as the Republican. And my question is, how many people did that and didn't notice? Meanwhile, the state legislature that got redder, I think his name is Mike Egan, he's a state rep, he was on the Capitol steps over the weekend saying, Trump helped us, now we're gonna help him. Russ Diamond, Metcalf, they're all posting that they wanna pick their own electors. This has been seen a number of postings throughout the week. I'm a little nervous about what is gonna happen in Pennsylvania. And what is interesting is all these Democratic candidates that are seeing weird things in their data, it's putting us in a weird position, because if we come out and say something doesn't make sense here, then we're going to be like, well, you're agreeing with Trump, right? So it's like, do you understand what they kind of did? It's like, it's diabolical, right? If you're saying something doesn't make sense in my race as a Democrat, then you're going to be ousted as somebody that is agreeing with Trump. And again, it's not just my race. I am talking to people on the state level all over, that none of their precinct data matches the phone banking and texting data, Republican support that they had. It did not show up. And I can't imagine, like Eugene DePasquale, that was up 3% on election day, he lost by 8%. Like, something doesn't make any sense that happened in the state level, unless there was a blue wave and then a red wave. It just doesn't make sense from what we were talking to voters. And
yeah. This sounds very familiar.
Yeah, it just exactly. Like, I feel like this group probably is the only group that understands that something doesn't make sense here. And again, none of these Democratic candidates are saying we won, but it literally looks like in our races that the Republican straight party voted when we had phone banked and text banked support that there was Republicans were gonna hit us down the belt. That we didn't see it at all. We didn't see it at all. It's bizarro weird. I'm concerned what our legislature is saying at the state level. I was specifically told that the person that I was running against was, his job was to give this state to Trump. That's what I was told.
Well, that's
Michelle.
Stephanie.
Yeah. We have the same thing happening in LA with candidates on a local level
who are saying that it's not matching their data in the same way. Just wanted to say that quickly.
Well, that, Michelle?
Yes.
Can we ask you, what are the audits like in Pennsylvania? Can you just give us a little information?
Well, here's the thing. We just lost the Auditor General's race. This is the other thing that happened. Like, now that went to the Republican. And that doesn't make any sense either. People hit Josh Shapiro, Biden, and Torsella, and they didn't hit our Democrat. Like, none of this makes sense of what's happening in our data down ballot in Pennsylvania. It just doesn't make sense. And again, none of these candidates are saying we won, but we got blown away in these elections. And it appears like almost in some places that Democratic or Republican turnout was 100%. 100%? Get out of here. Come on.
Wow. And of course, as I don't have to remind anybody that Pennsylvania, under the law, under the Constitution, if the Pennsylvania legislature wants to deny the public vote and then choose its own electors and shift the election to Donald Trump, they can do it. And, you know, this is really, go ahead.
Yeah, look, Michelle, to you and others who are wondering how you're going to deal with this, all I can say is you've got to line up your facts, and I would not be put off because somebody else happens to be claiming there was something wrong with this election. It sounds from what you said like you have an evidence-based approach to this, that you have some facts behind what you're saying. I am not seeing similar facts being provided by the Republicans or Trump or Mr. Trump who are opposed to this. We have looked into this. There's a call to which you're all invited. It's Wednesday night, the 11th, at it's going to be 8 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Central. We're still analyzing the data from the exit polls, but there are some indications that there may be an explanation for this. Not an explanation which will resolve it, but which will shed a lot of light on what you're seeing and a number of other people are seeing around the country.
Peter, can I ask you to put that in the chat so people have the link?
Yeah, put the link in the chat.
Yeah, I'll try and get a link. Yeah, okay.
Benny Smith, are you still with us, Benny Smith? From Tennessee?
Yeah, I'm here.
Benny, what happened in Tennessee, and can you comment on what you just heard about Florida and Pennsylvania?
Yeah, Tennessee seemed a little weird for me, but it was actually in the primaries. We had a candidate who was backed by the party. I think he had about $2.1 million in his war chest, and the Democratic nominee that beat him had about $8,000. And it seemed to me that with COVID, we ended up having absentee voting, but also the regular machine count. And the girl who won, she got about 33%. I think she came in second place or maybe even third in the paper count, but she bested about 55% of the machine count, which looked very odd. I equated it to saying that there was an earthquake and everybody who said that they was asked, did you feel the earthquake on paper? They said no, and the people on the machine said yes, despite them all being in the same location. So I'm looking at the precinct data for that because that was troubling for me because I thought that if they got the potential nominee out of the way in Tennessee, then they could move all that money back up in the senatorial fund and focus it on the more competitive races.
This kind of stuff, one thing's not clear to me. In Pennsylvania, what percentage was done on touchscreen? And the same in Tennessee. Are you still with a lot of touchscreen machines?
Yeah, we're mostly touchscreen in Tennessee. So we are in fact a red state, but the highly populated Democrat areas, they are touchscreen, and the primary vendor is ES&S. So we still got a lot of housekeeping to do here. Nonetheless, we are a red state. We did have a large percent of turnout. I would really be interested in looking at some Pennsylvania data. You guys know I do forecasts here, and I got 8 out of 10 of our people right. And if you consider the people that I would consider outliers, I got 9 out of 10 people right. So in Shelby County, we didn't even have this influx of turnout like most people think, like there were new participants. There were some new participants, but not nearly to the magnitude that, that people thought. So I, what she is describing in Pennsylvania is like what happened to Shelby County and what happened to Tennessee in 2008. So Obama won the presidency, but more than 100 years after Reconstruction, our Democratic legislature went red. And me and Lynn Bernstein was having this conversation earlier, where I thought people were taking their eyes off the prize, looking at the national races and giving up the entire state legislatures. So if you look at Michigan, which is another state that's in contention, they have a Republican legislature. And you have to ask yourself, if they run every 2 years, how did they keep the Republican legislature if they gave up the state?
So you're in touch with Lynn. Can you also be in touch with Michelle, Benny? We would really, yeah, sure. Especially in Pennsylvania, which could, you know, still decide the election the other way. Your expertise is essential. Can you post your email or where your contacts in the chat?
Yeah, I will. I know that we're working in Texas and in Alabama. I'm sorry, in Georgia right now. So I've been doing a lot of number crunching there, but Pennsylvania is definitely one that that could be a decider. So I'll post.
Oh, absolutely. And your expertise is unique, along with John Brakey and Ray Watson, Emily, and so many others. So please be in touch, and please stick with the calls as we go forward, because this is absolutely essential. Okay, let's get down to Georgia now. Georgia is where everybody's focus is, and afterwards we'll come back to Arizona as well. But do we have anybody on the call from Georgia? Is anybody with us from Georgia? Gary Crane, you mentioned that you were going to send people, or you're going to facilitate people going into Georgia. Gary, are you still with us?
Yeah. I'm working on raising some funding to cover transport for any out-of-staters that would like to go to Georgia. So if anybody on this call either knows anybody in Georgia, anybody at all that might perhaps help with housing, or better yet, knows anybody in a C3, C4, or Ossoff or Warnock campaign, because their websites are very opaque. They're only asking for money. It's very hard to find out who you email there if you're offering money for out-of-state canvassers. And so if anybody here can connect me with anybody in Georgia at all, my email is gary@getcouragenow.org.
Put it in chat.
Yeah, I put it twice in chat.
Okay,
also good. Also for Wayne Liebman several times.
All right, very good. Thank you for that, Gary. You know, Georgia obviously is going to be a decider. I hope to have people who are talking about going down there. Andrea Miller, hopefully, will have come back. And so let's see what we can do. Is anybody actually have concrete plans to go into Georgia and go state by and go door to door? We're also going to have to see about the registration rolls in Georgia. And we're going to have to inventory what kind of voting machines they have in Georgia. Does anybody know about the paper balloting in Georgia, whether that has is predominant?
I can tell you what the voting machines are in Georgia.
Please.
So in Georgia, they have brand new ballot marking devices for voters who vote in person, and then paper ballots for voters who voted by mail. And the ballot marking devices are basically unauditable because they produce a paper record that lists the voters, how the voter voted, but also have either a barcode or a QR code, which is what actually contains the votes that are counted. So if you audit it, you might be able to tell that those pieces of paper were counted correctly, but you don't know if they are an accurate representation of how people voted.
And Georgia uses Dominion, so they are under fire because they are allegedly on the same software patch that glitched in Michigan.
Well, we need to have an in-depth study of Georgia. And by next call, we'll have people on. A week from today, we'll have people on from Georgia. We can go through what happened there in great detail. Stacey Abrams, of course, has been on the case in Georgia. And obviously, everybody knows this is the for the control of the Senate. And we need to have a very, very full inventory of what has happened there and what will happen.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? we evolve from what we conceived. Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's green world.
Well, we bit that apple and the garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground,